Hello, everyone, and welcome to Women with Issues. I'm Tracy Maxwell Hurd, and joined by my co-host, Diane Calivris. Say hello, Diane.
Hello, Diane.
Well, we are now definitely in the thick of it. Joe Biden has officially picked a running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, out of California. If you were watching the convention, she officially accepted the nomination. And even before she accepted the nomination, as soon as she was announced, controversy is already underway. But we're going to get back to that in a few minutes. First, we want to remind our listeners, as we shared in our initial podcast, we were journalist majors in college. She discovered this article from AARP, where they had commissioned a poll from the Harris poll, and it addressed women over 50 and determined that over 90% will be voting in the 2020 election cycle. And anyone that pays any attention to politics knows that's beyond unprecedented for any period, any election cycle, any demographic historically. So obviously, we, our peers, have an opportunity to impact the 2020 election outcomes. Basically, we rule. You know, we show up, we rule.
We rule.
And as Diane and I are young chickens, over 50, we are speaking to our peers here. The results of that actual poll not only identified that women over 50 would demonstrate their presence, but that 7 out of 10 at that point, and this was back in November of 2019, still had not decided who they were voting for. So great opportunity for candidates to make a case and sway and influence voters. But the issues that they were focused on then, healthcare was huge. The quality of healthcare, affordability of healthcare, ethics was a huge issue for them. The economy was a huge issue. They had a really unfavorable opinion of pharma, like 65% had a negative opinion of pharma and basically how they were handling their business in relation to prescriptions specifically. Health comes up under several different, in several different ways. Pharma, affordability, and just the issue of healthcare, because we are predominantly the healthcare managers for ourselves and our family.
You know, this poll came out in December. The priorities have changed. AARP did another poll. Now, this is not just women. This is men and women over 50. By far, the number one concern right now is coronavirus. 66% put that as their number one concern. 49% is the economy, and then healthcare down to 32%. But my question is not coronavirus the same as healthcare?
You know, sure.
They might not be looking at it as one and the same issue. However, even though the CARES Act says that all costs associated with COVID-19 will be covered by the government so that people don't have to pay the price for this pandemic, I don't know if that's so, because we don't know a lot about this virus. And people have said, you know, they're getting migrating issues, you know, lingering issues that last for weeks or even months after, you know, after they no longer have the virus. So, you know, this is going to be a big deal. People are going to maybe go into debt over this. They already are going into debt over rising healthcare costs. So this is another way that it's going to impact the economy and specifically our peer demographic, those over 50, you know.
Sure. I think the poll just indicates how hyper aware people are of Corona and how it impacts all of those other things. You know, Corona is impacting the economy. Corona is impacting the education system. You know, Corona is impacting everything right now.
Of course.
One thing that was not on the list that has since become a really huge issue, race was not on the list. And women are having a lot of conversation about that issue right now.
Right.
White women are. Robin DiAngelo's book is trending. You know, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. She's doing all kinds of forums. So
race was there, but it wasn't near the top in terms of being most important to women over 50, but it was there. And I wonder if they said 95% of women over 50 will vote. That was 8 months ago. What is that now? I mean, how much more power? And that women over 50 make up 28% of all voters. Mm-hmm. So that's huge.
Which is huge. Exactly. Especially if the other populations don't turn out at high levels, like women over 50. We could really have absolute influence over this.
And it also showed that African-American and Hispanic women, they're huge, huge voters, very likely to vote. 87% of African-American women and 85% of Hispanic women said that they are very likely to vote. Well, now 8 months later, and now we have Kamala Harris, that number's probably bigger. And they've really been speaking to Black and brown people on the, DNC, I'm sorry.
The DNC, yep, at the convention, for sure. Yes. And I think the fact, of course, that we have the first Black vice presidential candidate in history, female, that is absolutely going to influence and motivate Black women to come out. And I think what happened in Alabama, and that was 2019, I believe, in that race down there, it was Black women that turned out and absolutely shut down, and can't remember his name, but the guy that was running and was accused of being a pedophile and had a 20-year history of incidents, yes, with the police and had been arrested at the mall and all kinds of things. And
I remember that.
Yeah, absolutely demonstrated that it was African-American women turning out that really swayed that and caused him to lose that election.
I wanted to ask you this, since you are African-American, is I've been hearing this a lot lately, that African-American women have been the backbone of American politics. And I want to ask you what that meant.
Well, I think African-American women, just like white women historically, have been put behind the scenes, but it does not mean that we've not been engaged and active. When you look at the civil rights movement, it was African-American women who were the quote unquote administrators of the movement. You know, they were the ones that were baking the cakes and pies and collecting money in shoeboxes and doing all of the organization and administrative work, making sure people were getting bailed out of jail if they were arrested, making sure that marchers were where they were supposed to be. So, but they were not the ones who were allowed to be, you know, out on, you know, front and center on the stage, making the speeches. You know, probably the most prominent woman that comes from the civil rights movement is Rosa Parks, because of, you know, her taking a seat. But there are a lot of women who were absolutely involved, some whose names I don't even know, because they were just out there, you know, soldiers on the field doing their thing. But Dorothy Height was very involved in Brown versus the Board of Education. Fannie Lou Hamer, come forward a little more, Shirley Chisholm. There were a lot of women who, and these are women who actually had some prominence, but there were a lot of women who were behind the scenes working just as hard, whose names you would never know.
Mm. You know, and since we're celebrating the women's right to vote, mm-hmm, it really had never occurred to me until I read White Fragility that did not include Black women. So
exactly.
I realized this year that, you know, we're celebrating that, but mm-hmm, at the same time, recognizing that did not include all of us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think she does a good job of pointing out that, you know, women have not all stood together historically over time, even on issues that benefited both of us. But, you know, Black women were around during the suffragette movement. I think I shared with you last week, my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, is actually in photographs in the March on Washington. And you see them right, the Black women in the front line, those are Deltas who marched with the women on Washington for the vote. But we didn't get the vote at that time. So, you know, we've always been involved. When you go to the feminist movement, Black women were right there, front and center. But that's where, you know, the bonds kind of were fractured a bit, because the issues that Black women and their families were facing were very different than the issues of white women. And we didn't feel that that was part of the feminist movement, that it was being represented. And there was a rift there.
Yeah, I learned a lot watching that. You know, the show on FX, I believe it's where it is, Mrs. America.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, all about the ERA. Equal Rights Amendment and that movement and the early days of that Shirley Chisholm and Gloria Steinem and
exactly.
Phyllis, what was her last name? It really revolves around her.
She was conservative. So she wasn't she wasn't marching with Gloria Steinem. She was in opposition to the agenda, absolutely.
Right. She was in opposition, and here she was opposing the ERA. you know, talking about how homemakers were the backbone of America and that women really didn't deserve equal rights, that they should be at home raising their children while mm-hmm. she was out, you know, on the road all the time, you know, campaigning. Against
getting a car,
while she actually had a black housekeeper
exactly
raising her children
mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah, a little bit of hypocrisy there,
a little bit of hypocrisy there.
So, what are you hearing about Kamala?
Well, let's go back to voting just for a second.
Okay, so.
You know, we're hearing a lot about, you know, there possibly being a mail fraud. You know, President Trump has brought this up. But I've learned that in, for example, Washington and Oregon, 97% of people typically vote by mail, and their fraud has never been a concern. So really,
fraud's never been a concern anywhere.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of hyperbole around it, and it is something that is not encouraged by conservatives, because usually those who are voting by mail yield a progressive outcome.
I heard that.
So, I mean, you know, it's all the things that you hear about voter suppression. Those are things that the conservatives are saying are not suppressive, but just making sure they are controls for voter fraud. But when you look at who it negatively impacts, it impacts those who tend to generally vote Democrat or, you know, a progressive ticket. So,
interesting.
Yeah. And well, same thing with voting by mail.
What I also learned here, which kind of opposes that, but it could be a different demographic, was that back in December, 40% planned to vote early or by mail. And again, this is women over 50. So that's pretty big. And probably a lot of that 40% are in the states where the majority do vote by mail. African American women, 44% plan to vote by mail, and Hispanic, 50%. Are particularly likely to vote early or by mail. So I learned about this website. VoteAmerica.com is a great resource. You can get any information you want about voting. You can register to vote. You can check your registration, because that's important. Make sure that your name is spelled correctly. Make sure that they are talking about now even checking, if you vote by mail, your signature and matching it with with past signatures. You can find your polling location, the hours, because, you know, there's a concern that due to coronavirus, there may be long lines. Exactly. A lot of older people may not want to expose themselves to the virus. So, and then in some states, it's a two-step process. Here in Ohio, where we are, I've already requested my mail-in ballot. So you have to first request the mail-in ballot, and then wait for that to come, and then mail the ballot. So whereas exactly. other states, they mail the ballot directly to you. So it's important to find out what they're doing in your state if you don't know.
Yeah. And if the voteamerica.com isn't specific enough, I encourage you to just contact your county board of election. Mm-hmm. Because then, you know, you're absolutely getting the most specific and accurate information for your county where you will actually be voting.
Some people may not have access to internet. So yes, they just call their local board.
Yeah, just call your local board of elections. They can look you up right there on the phone, tell you what they do and don't have and what you need to do. And Diane, you mentioned the coronavirus. That's huge when we're talking about vote by mail, because we don't know where we're going to be in November. You know, mm-hmm. we are, you know, what, 2.5 months away from that, 75 days, I think, something like that from Election Day. So who knows how the virus is going to be presenting at that time and in what communities and states. You know, it's not the same, you know, unilaterally across the country. So, you know, this is an opportunity to safeguard your vote regardless. Mm-hmm. You know, get it in early, you know, make sure everything's okay so you don't have to worry. Because the biggest thing that I'm concerned about is that, you know, COVID-19 raises its head again in a really ugly way, and voting by mail will be the only option that we will have, and the system will get overwhelmed, you know, especially when you're looking at activity by the Postal Service and, you know, the measures that, who is it, Louis DeJoy, the postmaster general, was taking to take measures that would negatively impact voting by mail. I mean, right here in Columbus, Ohio, 2 days ago or so, they were showing on the mail where they were literally taking up, physically taking up mailboxes from downtown and, you know, just different places around central Ohio.
Now, why would they do that 2 months out?
The explanation that they gave, well, they're going to stop that. They're stopping all activities until after Election Day. However, the explanation that they gave was that this is something that they do on a regular basis. You know, they're always assessing the operations of the postal system and who's using what mailboxes where. If one doesn't, you know, isn't getting use, they'll take it out of circulation and that kind of thing. That's not how it read to the community. I mean, you just saw, there were just literally videos of trucks with dozens of mailboxes on them being removed.
Wow.
It didn't look strategic. It just looked unilateral. So,
And there are a lot of older people who just want to do things the way they've always done it. You know, they want to walk to the mailbox.
Absolutely. Or they, you know, they want to go to the poll. But everyone understands that that may not be an option. So doing what we can to bolster the U.S. Postal Service and make sure that they're in the best position to be as responsive to this and transition to be responsive to this as quickly as possible is absolutely what we need to do. And we were going the opposite direction because when you talk to some of the local postmasters, and one was actually interviewed on the news, and he said, if we have the supports that we need, it's not a big deal at all. It's nothing different than Christmas. You know, when you have all of these cards moving and gifts and things, you know, moving through the mail. He said, it's not that we don't have the ability, but, you know, if you continue to reduce the resources that are going to the postal system, then you are going to have a problem.
I don't think it's going to be an issue. People really want to vote in this election, young and old.
Yeah, I agree. There are people who are concerned because they want to wait until the conventions have passed. They want to make sure that they've heard all of the information. You know, when you go further down the ballot, we're talking about the presidential so much, but there's more than that on the ballot. And many of those candidates haven't really even made a presence yet. You know, that really starts to get engaged around, you know, September. And that's when really the majority of voters tune in to find out who's running, you know, what the issues are on the ballot and making those decisions. So the earlier you vote, the less information you may have access to. But whenever you vote, it's just important that you make sure you have access and you're on the rolls that, so that your vote will be counted.
Okay. Let's take a quick 30-second break here, and then we'll talk about Kamala Harris and a few other things.
So, I'll ask you again. What are you hearing about Kamala?
What am I hearing? Well, she's a tough cookie. I'm going to call her a badass.
There you go. I was going to say, that's not what you said last night.
Yeah.
I mean, she's strong.
She's strong. Biden said he chose her because she's tough. She has to be tough to have made a career in criminal justice in California, right?
Absolutely.
She's a fighter. She has campaign experience. I think that's a big reason why he chose her over some of the others. She can't have too many ghosts in her closet because, you know, in this day and age, they're going to attack. They're already coming out. Biden said she's simpatico with him on the issues. She does differ from him a little bit, healthcare. We'll talk about that. But since she has been a member of the U.S. Senate representing California since 2017, before that she was the Attorney General of California. Prior to that, the District Attorney of San Francisco and the Deputy District Attorney of Alameda County prior to that. She is a United States citizen. Born in Oakland in 1954. She's 55. Her mother, as you know, everyone knows, is Indian from India. Her father is an immigrant from Jamaica. She went to Howard University, which is an all-Black school.
Absolutely.
Correct? Didn't you go there?
Nope, I went to Hampton.
Oh, I had it wrong.
Close, but no cigar.
She got her law degree from Hastings College. She is married to Doug Emhoff. She's been married for 5 years. This is her first marriage, so she waited to marry. She doesn't have any natural born children of her own, but she is close to her stepchildren.
Absolutely.
From her husband's previous marriage. In fact, I saw an article in Elle magazine where she said that she is dear friends with his first wife.
Right.
She quoted, there's a quote that said that our modern family is almost a little too functional. You saw her stepdaughter at the DNC last night. They call her Mamala.
Right.
And she also said that they are her endless source of joy and love. She appears to be very, you know, close with her husband. She said that he's funny and her best friend.
One thing that I wanted to know that I looked up, because I really hadn't heard and I didn't remember from the debates her speaking to this, was what committees she had served on in the Senate. So what I found was that she served on the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs, the Committee on the Budget, Judiciary, and the Select Committee on Intelligence. And I think those are some pretty powerful committees and pretty relevant to the job of running government. Keeping us safe, knowing what's going on in the world, and certainly, you know, managing the budget. Now, we're not required in this country to have a balanced budget, but we certainly are always talking about the appropriations within the budget and where we're spending the money. And, you know, that speaks to what our priorities are as a nation. So, I mean, I think she comes with some pretty significant experience in terms of her time in the Senate, her experience, and, you know, as you pointed out, even what she's done prior to coming to the Senate. She has a really strong track record in areas that Americans say is important to them, you know, crime, criminal justice, you know, keeping our community safe and, you know, looking out for our money, you know, the taxpayers. And that's when you're talking about what we referenced earlier, the economy and really understanding where our dollars are going and how, if we're making the best use of them. But, you know, everything's not been rosy for Kamala. There has been some pushback. You know, as I said earlier, the controversy's already started. Mm-hmm. But I find it really interesting that they're really having a hard time coming up with some things, you know, to really, I've not heard a lot about them challenging her on her record. As I was listening this morning, there wasn't a lot of commentary on her comments last night. There was some criticism that she's not a good speaker. I thought she was a great speaker.
I thought she was very good.
There was really not any criticism of her commentary. Lots of criticism on former President Barack Obama because he went really hard after President Trump. But I was interested to see that the things that were being talked about really had nothing to do with, at least at this point, had nothing to do with her capacity or her capabilities to be, to lead and to be the vice president. You know, of course, even prior to her acceptance last night, you know, they were challenging her citizenship as they had done with Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, her family spent time in Canada, but she was born here. She is an American citizen. Her service has all been within the United States of America. You know, they're challenging her blackness, which really blows me away.
Does it?
Because as an African-American woman, yes. And I have to, you know, we are always trying to walk down the middle and make sure that we're presenting both sides on this. But in full disclosure, anybody that looks me up knows that I'm a formerly elected Democrat. So, you know, but I'm also a journalist, so I know how to keep it balanced. And we're going to be balanced going forward. But today, as we talk about Kamala, I'm, as an African-American woman, am a little affronted that they are trying to, and the best way I can think of to say it is, take her away from me. Because, and I heard Trevor Noah say something about how we're allowed to be black whenever there's a negative situation that they want to talk about. But whenever we're rising to the top, whenever we are demonstrating excellence in any field, then there's always the desire to take our blackness away from us.
Wow, good point.
That was amazing, absolutely. So, and Kamala Harris herself just this week has come out and affirmed for anyone who was questioning, yes, I am Black. And if you look historically at how this country has referenced Black people, every state except for a very, very few, and I can't remember, but almost 50, all 50 states had the one drop rule, which meant if you have one drop of Black blood in you, you are Black. Hmm. And that would go back five generations. If there is one Black person in your family within five generations, you are Black. Hmm. So if everybody else is white, but there's one Black person, how does that work exactly? Hmm. But that's how deep that distinction of race abides within this nation. However, you know, when you're talking, you know, and there was even reference about President Obama, that, you know, he wasn't really Black because, and he didn't really have the Black experience. And that's what they're saying about Kamala now. You can't be Black and not have the Black experience mm-hmm. anywhere on this planet. Doesn't matter. But because, you know, he was raised by a white grandmother in Kansas and she worked for a bank, you know, he didn't really have the experience that other young Black kids were having. No. I'd really be curious to hear you say that to him.
Yeah.
If you, or to Kamala.
If you look Black, you have the Black experience.
Absolutely.
I assume. Yes.
That's it. Because race is based on skin color and racism. And if there's a perception that you are Black, then you suffer the perils of being Black.
I did ask you the other day if she was African American, mm-hmm. and you said no.
No, she is African American, but this is how some Africans describe African Americans. If they are African born, they are Africans living in America. But when their children are born here in America, then they say they are African American. Kamala was born here. So by that definition, she would be African-American, if that's true. I don't know that I even ascribe to that.
So not all African-Americans are Black. Well, okay.
Let's African-Americans. Okay, that's another podcast.
Let's put these to bed. Oh, my gosh.
We can do that one for a whole show.
Yeah, we'll do that on another race episode, which we are planning to do, because that's a big issue.
We got lots of feedback from that. People seem to really enjoy those two podcasts, and that conversation has continued offline. Mm-hmm. So
those are our most popular podcasts.
Yeah. So as those conversations continue, we will revisit that again.
Okay. I did want to bring up some things that Kamala did accomplish during her time as DA. I thought this was awesome, actually, to be honest. She ended the prosecution of underage sex workers and looked at them as victims instead of criminals. Pretty significant there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Different.
Don't criminalize them. They're victims. She also fought for and won $16 billion increase in funds for her state in the wake of the foreclosure crisis. Mm-hmm. She created a public database of violent encounters between the police and the public.
Mm.
Yes.
Really relevant now. Yeah.
Yes. Now, I did hear some criticism. I think I was telling you, I went to the doctor. My doctor was not able to see me last week, and they put me with a nurse practitioner who happened to be a Black woman, young. You know, every time you go to the doctor now, they get younger and younger, right?
Yeah.
It's like, where's the doctor? I am the doctor.
Right.
She was not real happy with Kamala Harris as choice for VP. And I asked her why, and she mentioned that she chose not to prosecute a police officer in California who had killed an unarmed Black man. So I did not really figure out the details in that case.
There's been an awful lot of, I won't say an awful lot, there's been a lot of pushback. Back during the presidential debates is when that originally started to surface. I think the mistake that everyone makes, Republicans, Democrats, everyone, is that Blacks are monolithic in their thinking, and we are not. There are African Americans who were not supporters of Kamala's. There are some who were not, but, you know, are going to come around because this is the ticket. And, you know, though there may have been another choice, still see her as a viable choice and are comfortable in supporting her. And then there are those who really have issues with her record as a prosecutor and felt that she was much too harsh in her prosecution and sentencing of African Americans, and not just in that specific case. So I heard that quite a bit, and that was the reason that she didn't have more support, as my understanding, during the course of the primaries from many in the African American community. And I think many younger people, because when you're looking at what's happening with Black Lives Matter and all that, that's certainly something that is prevalent now and something that would definitely be important to them.
She's going to have to go along with Biden on the issues, but I think it is important to talk about where she stands and how they differ, because Biden has said that he only wants to serve one term, and he wants to, you know, hand over the reins to somebody younger, and he is 77 years old.
Right.
So, you know, there's a significant chance that she could be the presidential candidate in the next election.
Absolutely.
Or even, you know, God forbid, have to take over as president within the next 4 years. So
yeah,
I think
that's why the pick of the VP is always, you know, it's not a ceremonial kind of thing. You know, what vice presidents have done historically over time has differed significantly. Some, you may not even remember what they did when they were vice presidents. Others, you know, like Joe Biden, were incredibly active. excuse me, they really highlighted a lot last night about what he did around domestic violence, which was huge, especially, you know, obviously how women responded to that. You know, he's had a lot of dealings with, you know, foreign affairs, with economic issues. So, I mean, you can't do that many terms in the Senate and not almost have done everything. However, her personal perspectives and agenda absolutely is important, because she will possibly have the opportunity to step forward with that. So where they differ right now isn't so significant, because of course she is going to support his agenda as the president.
Well, and you know what? She's one of us. She's a woman over 50.
Absolutely.
You know, going to represent our priorities.
And she's, you know, a minority. So, I mean, there are a number of demographics that are going to be looking at her. And, you know, even though she identifies as a Black woman, presents herself that way, she also is of Asian Indian descent. You know, that community is very excited about her being on the ticket and feels represented just as the African-American community does. So, you know, you can't discount that. And, you know, what are those interests? You know, how is immigration going to play this? What will those expectations be? Because both of her parents were immigrants. So, you know, how is that going to be a part of this administration going in now? Because she will have to champion something of her own. And, you know, what will it be? What will the focus be?
Well, like I said, she is one of us. I have a question for you. Do you think more people are going to vote against Trump or for Biden?
Really good question. I think both will certainly happen. I don't know. Joe Biden is within the Democratic Party. He speaks to a lot of demographics. He's popular with African Americans. You know, I guess certainly seniors, you know, his peers. But, you know, Joe presents as the every man kind of candidate, as by the fact that I just called him Joe. You know, I mean, and that's how he presents himself. You know, hi, I'm Joe. You know, not I'm the vice president of the United States. He really is intentional about connecting with everyday working people. And that was demonstrated again last night in, you know, some of the videos that they presented and the testimonials from people who just had been in his sphere, you know, during his time of service, from, you know, conductors on the train, elevator operators, a number of people that they brought forward who had seen him in his day-to-day activities and how he responded to regular people.
I think,
but he connects with African Americans and did so very well, even, you know, when he was the vice president. Yeah, so I think he speaks to a lot of demographics.
I think they're really focusing on his ethics and his character. And, you know, that is huge among our peer group.
And, you know, they've tried to come after, you know, Joe Biden for, you know, the Too movement. There was effort there. There were a couple of women who said, you know, he hugged a little too long. He kissed my hair, something. There was a really strong one where a young lady came out and accused him of putting his hand down her upper skirt. That kind of fizzled out because the people she called forward to validate her story backed out, one of them being her brother. So, you know, I mean, there are going to always be those kinds of attacks. So far, you know, none of that stuck. I think he did a good job of being accountable for that in saying that, certainly, though that was never my intention, it doesn't matter if I ever make anyone feel uncomfortable. You know, I absolutely apologize. I don't think you'll see a lot of that affection that he's known for going forward. You know, COVID has a lot to do with that. No one's touched anyone right now. But, you know, certainly something that I think he would be mindful of having been accused.
Right.
And we're going to revisit the Kamala conversation again. There will be more of that to come. We're going to do a side-by-side in an upcoming episode after the Republican National Convention has convened. So we will have official nominees, official candidates on both sides, and really be able to do a side-by-side a breakdown of what those agendas are, where the successes have been, and just give a little more information for people to consider as we move closer to November 3rd, Election Day.
Mm-hmm. A lot of issues that we haven't looked at, like gun control, you know, all of those we'll be able to compare side to side.
Absolutely. So remember to cast your vote, vote early, check with VoteAmerica.com. If you have questions, or call your local board of elections.
And we would really, really enjoy your feedback. So you can find us on Facebook at Women with Issues Podcast. We are also on Instagram and Twitter as Women with Issues. We would love to have ratings and feedback.
And what you would like to hear more about.
We also want to throw in thanks to our technical producer, Cade Hessman.
Yay,
Cade. And we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and now Stitcher. We are Women with Issues.
And we're talking to you. Till next time.
Bye-bye.